Ron Ananian.
It occurred to me that if I started to be observant, there was probably anywhere between $400,000 and $500,000 worth of cars around me at any one given time, and I'm driving my 97 Ranger with 221,000 miles on it.
Thank God for American cars. Every little thing you do.
Car Doctor.
You're telling me their story is that because the vehicle doesn't have a full charge in the battery, the start-stop system stops working?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right to me. Does it sound right? Doesn't make any sense.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Where should I start today? I'm not sure. There's a lot I could talk about, as there always is. I think I'd like to mention, you know, I want to talk about the simple stuff because I don't know that we talk about that enough here. It's always some complex. My car is broken. How do I, you know, Maron, my car makes right-handed turns on left-handed Tuesdays and things like that. And it's always something, not always, but goofy something that, you know. I want to talk a little bit about maintenance and just some of the common sense things that you should still be doing to a car, even though, you know, there's a lot of computers involved and chips and there's a lot of electronics in the vehicle. There's still, it's still an engine, right? It's still a vehicle for those of you driving internal combustion engine vehicles. And only 2% of you are driving electric, so there's got to be, whoop, I said the word electric again. I swore I wouldn't do that. I'm not going to bring up electric cars till you do. Let's see how long we can go like this. I'll probably break the rule, but I'll try. Obviously, oil changes are still a priority, just fluid levels. What you have to think about is if you're not changing the oil on a regular basis, if you feel that the vehicle manufacturer following their guideline of changing the oil when the light comes on or the engine falls out, whichever comes first, that's okay, then you should at least be checking oil on a semi-regular level. Every 2 to 3 months, find a rhythm, learn how to do it, pop the hood, pull the dipstick, and it's easy. You can do it when the engine is cold, first thing in the morning, which is usually the best time because the engine's had all night to drain down and all the oil's in the crankcase, and have somebody show you if you don't know, if you find somebody that can. Just, you know, pop the hood, open the hood. You should know how to open the hood, by the way. Gosh, I would hope so that you can do that. And check the engine oil level. Most cars, you can still do that. Some of the highline German cars, you folks know by now that there's some button on the dashboard and you're counting on sensors to tell you oil level and everything else because a dipstick would be beneath something German to check a level on its own, so we don't want to do that. Oil level, tire pressure, although tire pressure gets a little more complicated because now you've got to count on somebody either having a gauge or you've got to find a good quality tire pressure gauge, which isn't hard to do. You just have to be willing to spend a little bit of money. You know, I think $20, $25 buys you a decent tire pressure gauge today. One of the things that you can do is stop by your local mechanic that you have a long-term relationship with because you all have done that, right? You all, you know, have a relationship with your mechanic where you can walk in and say, hey, here's my tire pressure gauge. Can you stack it up against yours? Because since he's your mechanic or she's your mechanic, you know they're doing the right thing and they've got a good quality tire pressure gauge in the shop. Well, don't they? Doesn't everybody? And, you know, if their gauge says 22 and your gauge says 22, then you're good. If their gauge says 22 and your gauge says 25 and they swear by their gauge, then, you know, you've got an adjustment to make. So just put a tire pressure gauge. Checking tire pressure once a month is still a priority. You know, we're going to go into winter in the majority of the country now. And for every 10 degrees of temperature change, you're going to see a change of tire pressure 1 pound up or down, depending upon which way that the pressure goes. So just be aware there's going to be some fluctuation. Tires. What kind of shape are your tires in? And let me tell you, if you're counting on, yeah, I'll just get tires whenever I can, tires have become an event trying to find tires. I can't imagine what it was like trying to buy tires during the Second World War when there was rationing and, you know, A cards, B cards, and all the other stuff that they had in terms of when they would let people buy supplies and tires and things like that. I just called for tires this morning. I stopped by the shop today to check the mail and do a couple of other things because I have a mailman that can't read. I have an illiterate mailman. I haven't quite figured it out yet. The key drop box outside the shop says, this is not a mailbox. It looks like a mailbox. This is not a mailbox. And the brass mail slot says, this is not a mail slot, because that's where we have customers put keys. But unfortunately, my mailman, I don't think he can read, because I still find my mail in there from time to time. So when I don't find it or can't find it, or, you know, if we're closed every once in a while, I'll stop by, I'll check the mail. We were closed yesterday. It was the first Friday of the month. So just something to be aware of. Just, you know, if you can read, just looking at tire pressure, looking at tread on your tires, just things to do. You know, and the old standard about the penny, you know, everybody must know this, right? You take a penny, if you can still find one, if we still put those out there, put the penny into the tread, Lincoln's head toward the tire. Can you see the top of Lincoln's head in the tire tread? If you can, then the tire's shot and it needs to be replaced. And that's over with. So just looking at tires. A great time of the year. Here we are 3-4 weeks before the holidays, that it would be a good time to think about the vehicle is stuck on the side of the road. Open the trunk. Open the trunk for two reasons. Number one, do you have any dead bodies in the trunk or anything else of massive weight? Because it seems like we've got everything in the trunk of our vehicles. I've yet to open, or I shouldn't say that, I open very few vehicles where I look at the stuff people are hauling around. I opened a trunk the other day to get a wheel lock key out of it, and the person had, no lie, their beach chairs, their beach umbrella, the shovel, the little bucket, and all the inflatable toys for the kids. And you know, it adds up to weight. It's extra weight. In a day and an age of $3.50 to $4 a gallon gasoline, weight counts, right? We want better fuel economy. Empty the trunk, all right? And, you know, get all the excess dead weight out of there. And number one, and put it away so it's ready for you for next year. And then what do you have in the car as far as emergency stuff? Do you have, you know, are you traveling, depending upon where you are in this great country of ours, are you traveling down remote roads in bad weather? Do you need a winter blanket in case the car gets stuck? Do you need a snow shovel to dig your way out of a snow ditch? Do you need, you know, batteries for your cell phone, emergency radio, and so forth, trail mix, you know, all the things that you can put into a trunk of a vehicle so you're prepared for the bad weather. It's also a good time of the year to do that, because with the holidays coming, want to know what to get your favorite somebody or someone? You know what? Portable tire pressure inflators. They make them. They've got them all over the place. You can go out to go check O'ReillyAuto.com. I'm sure O'Reilly Auto Parts, if you've got a store near you, or O'ReillyAuto.com will have tire inflator kits and, you know, I know they've got emergency roadside kits, things that you want to have in the car in the event of an emergency. Do that. Not to mention, you can get some of your holiday shopping out of the way. So, you know, just, is the car ready? And then, obviously, in the last little thing, and you can do all these things, right? I think on a degree of difficulty on a scale of 1 to 5, probably tire pressure might be the most difficult. That's a 4 or 5, because you've got to count on somebody else, unless you get a tire pressure inflator from Santa Claus or whoever your holiday guru is. You know, that's okay. But the rest of the stuff you can do on your own. Start the car up, turn on all the lights, and walk around. Have somebody sit in the car, step on the brake. Do the brake lights all light up? Do you have high beam, low beam? You know, these are all the things that are going to get you out of trouble and keep you out of getting a ticket, which is obviously a pain in the neck too. You know, but basic stuff. Are we doing that? Are we doing enough of the basics? And I say this because it seems like we're all waiting for, well, there's no dash lights on, the car must be perfect. That's not necessarily the answer. You know, not necessarily that the dash lights around the car is perfect. It's there's certain things the computer doesn't do. There's certain things that can happen. And, you know, then look through maintenance records. These are some of the things you can take control and take the power to do these things and at least know what you're looking to do. When were spark plugs done last? When was the last time you put an air filter in the car? When was the last time somebody did a cabin filter? I like to do air and cabin filters together. Obviously, the air filter is for the engine to breathe. The cabin filter is for you to breathe. And, you know, when was the last time any of this was done? The vehicle, we had a 2009 F-150 in the shop this week that has 63,000 miles on it, and we're now scheduling it for spark plugs. Why? Well, yeah, I get it. I hear what you're saying. Ron, the plugs are good to 100,000 miles. Yeah, but at the rate this guy puts on mileage, that could be another 10 years. And he doesn't want to wait that long. Will the plug come out of the head? Will the plug come out of the head at, what, 12 years old? You know, so consider doing certain things by time as well as by mileage. It's just very, very important. And then my last comment about things to check, and this is a tough one. I don't know how you would do this, but, you know, talk to your mechanic, I guess, maybe is the conversation. I'll tell you the story this way. We had a 2014 Ford Escape in the shop this week. First of all, you couldn't get the lug wrench, a socket, or anything on these lug nuts without using a hammer to drive it on, because the nuts had either been over-torqued. Some of them were over-torqued. They were so old and beat up. Moisture gets under the head of the lug nut, and it expands it. It rusts in a boop, and it gives it a boo-wow, and it pops out. And it's then hard to get the socket on or the lug wrench on, because now that it's just the next size up, and you won't have that. So, you know, hopefully you've been rotating tires on a regular basis. Your mechanic's been rotating tires. You know, ask him, hey, you know, Fred, Joe, George, John, Sheila, whatever their name is. You know, how do you put lug nuts back on? Are you hand torquing them? Are you using an air gun and just cranking it up until you hear crack? So you don't want to be on the side of the road trying to change a flat on a lug nut you can't get off. Just opening conversation, just, you know, first volley of auto repair goes there. Just think about simple, think about basic, and do your typical maintenance stuff. That's what I want you to be aware of as we kick off this hour of the Car Doctor. And thanks for stopping by. I'm glad to be here with you, as I am each and every week. It's just, it's good to see you, as it were, here on radio. 855-560-9900. Run on any of the Car Doctor. I'm back right after this. Don't go away.
Don't call us.
That's right. If you call and we're not live, you can leave a message and we'll call you back to get you on the air with Ron. 855-560-9900. Speaking of Ron, here he is.
Hey, let's get over and talk to, let's go to Tom in Missouri. Let's start there. 11 Caravan and some trouble codes. Tom, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Thank you, sir. Well, I'm trying to diagnose what exactly is wrong. I got a 302, a 306, in a 420 code along with a P113E code. It started running real rough. And I had previously had a misfire codes, a 302, I think, and a 306. And I changed spark plugs. I didn't find them to be too bad, you know. And then I even did a compression test. But cylinder number six was... I think it was 95 pounds or something like that.
Right, okay.
And the rest of them were out of 124, 130. So I wasn't sure if I was having problems with that, with piston rings or what. And
let's back up here a second, Tom. You put plugs in it, right?
Correct.
Okay. When you did plugs...
Previous to these codes popping up.
Have the plugs now? Did the codes pop up since you put plugs in it, or they were there before?
No, they popped up since I put plugs in it.
Okay.
And then it just started running rough, and the car always felt like it was hot when you stand up in front of the car, but my temperature seemed to be fine. Oil temperature and water temperature. You know, I'm kind of glad they got these computers on here that
right.
You can read them right on the dash.
Right. Right.
But the car was always hot when you stood in front of it. I mean, it felt like extremely hot, so I didn't know if, you know, catalytic converter having issues or, you know.
Well, let's go back. Let's go back to the first code you talked. You talked about a 113E, correct?
Correct.
A 113E is bank 2 upstream oxygen sensor having a slow response rate. In other words, it's not switching
correct.
As it should. So,
correct.
And then, you know, you did plugs and whatever you did, and now you've got new stuff going on, all right? So let's do a couple of things, all right? Now, this is a 3-point, this is a what? This is a 3.8 motor? 3.6 motor.
3.8, yeah, 3.8.
3.8, 3.6? 3.6.
Yeah. I thought it was a 3.8, but it could be wrong.
Do you have an overhanging plenum where it comes over the one side of the valve cover?
Yes.
Okay. So... before you take anything apart, my first question would be, do you own a scan tool?
Yes.
Can you look at fuel trim? Does it display data?
I'm not at that adept at pulling that up or working my scan tool yet.
Well, let me make you adept. So, let me make you adept, brother. Don't be afraid of it. Does it display data is the first question.
I'd have to look. I've got two scan codes. My son has one. It's a little bitty dinky one, and then I was given another one at Christmas time. It's much bigger, but I, like I said, I don't. I think you have to buy so many programs or whatever.
Okay, so let me where I wanted you to go. I want you to look at Fuel Trim, which is, you know, regular listeners and maybe yourself included will tell you that's, you know, that's your heart rate and blood pressure. What does a doctor do every time you visit? They take basics and vitals, right? So I want you to look at Fuel Trim. If a good fuel trim and a healthy engine, good fuel trim will be 0 ± 10% short term, 0 ± 10% long term. Okay? I'd like to see what fuel trim is. If we don't have the ability to look at fuel trim or anything on data stream, I've got to go the long way around the barn. And when you hear me tell you what you got to do, you're going to go, geez, I'm going to go out and buy a scan tool if this one doesn't do it that does fuel trim because it's just easier.
Well, so you mean you're talking about pulling a fuel rail off and checking for pattern? Or
no,
what?
I don't want to go through. I don't want to go there yet. What I'd like you to do, if you can't display any kind of data, and we've kind of got to do the poke and hope thing, all right, I want you to pull that upper plenum back off. All right. I'd like you to pull that upper plenum back off. If you don't have a scan tool that does data stream, dare I wish, do you have anything like propane with the end of a hose that you could use to sniff around looking for vacuum leaks?
No, probably not. No. Okay. Well, no.
I can
look for vacuum leaks though. I mean, I'm not.
How are you going to look for them?
I just have to follow the hoses around.
Well,
the old-fashioned way.
What I'm thinking about is, what I want to know is, do you have an intake plenum gasket, not sealing, or do you have an intake plenum gasket that's out of line?
Well, I replaced those as well.
Okay.
Those is the plenum, and when I replaced the spark plugs, I went ahead and did that too. And then I drove the car for a while. These codes didn't pop up until after I, you know, changed spark plugs, drove the car for a while, and then I went out of state, and then it started acting all goofy on me when I got up in Pennsylvania.
Okay, so let's
from
do
Missouri
this.
To Pennsylvania, it's a little bit of a distance there.
Let's do this then. I'm gonna assume you can't do data stream. All right. I want you to take a magic marker and mark each coil 1, 2, 3, 4 by cylinder, so you don't get confused when you do what I tell you to do. All right.
Okay.
I want you to take the plenum back off, make sure all the gaskets are good, that they're sealing, that you got them on there right, there's nothing askew. I want you to pull each coil out, making sure it's seated properly against the plug. There isn't a boot pushed to the side, and there's no way that you've got a coil installed incorrectly. All right? I want you to swap coils around so that they're... I'll tell you what, Tom, I got to tell you. Let me put you on hold. I don't want to rush this. All right? Stay right where you are. Let me pull over and take the pause. Rather than go up against the clock. And when I come back, we'll finish up. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. We're on the end of the Car Doc. I'm talking with Tom in Missouri. Tom, you're still there.
Yes, sir.
So what we've got to do is, you've got some misfire codes going on. All right. We've got to address those first. They're the most important. All right. Now, maybe they're related to what you did. Maybe they're not. All right. But this is going to tell us. And then again, maybe it's just, you know, like I said, this could just be something brand new. I want you to number all the coils. And then take a look at the cylinders that are reporting misfires. What did you say? 2, 3, and 6?
I think it's 2, 3, and 6, or 3 and 6. Or...
Right, which, whatever it is. And I want you to move those coils around and write down where you put them, which is, that's the part of the reason why I've got you numbering them, because it's easy to get confused here. So take 3 and put it in 4, take 6 and put it in 5, take 2 and put it in 1. Just move them around, all right? Try not to move one of the problem coils or problem cylinder coils to a potential problem cylinder, if you know what I'm saying. I don't want you to stop 3 and 6, because if you still get misfires on 3 and 6, you know, it doesn't tell us anything. All right?
Yeah. I did switch 4 and 6, and It still had misfired cylinder number six.
Okay. And, so, and cylinder number six is the one that has low compression.
Yes. Right. And that one, the plug was a little bit darker than the other, but it wasn't completely fouled out or anything.
All right. Because,
and that was the new plug.
Because what I want to see, does it stay with the cylinder? Does it stay the same hole? And if it does, then there's a chance, pretty good chance, that you've got a cylinder head issue. They've got known valve train issues with that engine where the valve seat falls out of the head. Oops.
You would think it would be more of that than the piston ring?
Yeah, more than likely. More than likely.
Okay.
You know, I'm not saying it's not possible, but at least it gives you a direction. How many miles are on this, Tom?
250,000.
Well, at that point, quite frankly, at a quarter million miles, I don't think it matters if you can prove it's engine and not something simple like an injector or a plug or a coil. I think you're doing an engine. If you like the vehicle, if you're keeping the vehicle, you know, I wouldn't tell you to take apart and do heads on a quarter million mile engine because you've still got an engine with a quarter million miles underneath it. And
right. And I haven't done anything as far as timing. And I don't know if that's a belt or what that is on there. So I haven't.
I believe that's a chain motor. But the other thing you got to address is catalytic converter. You got a P0420, you know, that is probably, I mean, there's some testing that I'd like to do, but it's probably a cat. So, you know, round numbers, I'll tell you, New Jersey numbers, don't fall over, because I know other parts of the country aren't what we are, but I guarantee you here in New Jersey, that's got to be $4,000 to $6,000 all day long to swing an engine. And and then catalytic converters.
If
that cat pipe from Chrysler is what I think it is, you could have $2,500, $3,000 in parts. So you're going to put $8,000-$9,000 in this truck. But here's the catch, right? And here's what you got to think about.
Yep.
Go buy a new one. Go price out a new one.
Right.
You know, a new Caravan today got to be every bit of $60,000. Say that three times fast. Yeah. You know, is it?
Yeah. Yep.
So it's, you know, and can you find one? That's the other issue.
Right? Well, true. And then what I've read online is as far as 2011 was the worst year that Dodge ever came out with the Grand Caravan, according to the Consumer Reports. So,
right. You know, listen.
I haven't had that much issue.
Right. You got a quarter million miles. You got a quarter million miles out of it, brother. You didn't do bad. So. You know, and then you got to think about, you know, you got to play the what if game. What if is a great game. Do you know how to play what if?
What if the engine goes bad?
What if you put an engine in it and the transmission goes bad? Would you put a trans in it? You know, that's what if. So never.
I did all that back in the 60s when I was a younger man.
Yeah. Well, hey, Tom. Things are a little different. Things are a little different today, but I understand. You know,
let's go, Brandon. Yeah.
Well, oh boy, Tom. I appreciate the call, brother.
Thank you very much, sir.
I can't go there. You be well.
Right.
Yes, sir. You take good care.
Take care.
You're very good. Bye. Very good, sir. You're very welcome, Tom. We're going to get political. It's going to become a political show. I can't do that. I thought he was going to talk about electric cars, but that's.
I love it.
You got somebody else you want me to talk to? Let me go help Derek in Michigan and see what's going on up here. Derek, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. We'll get right off of that venue and go to this one. How can I help you?
Well, I'd like to echo the last caller, but let's stick with cars today.
Yes, sir.
So the question that I have is, it's a preventative issue for, I guess we'll call it in the future. So today I took possession of a 2022 GMC Yukon Denali.
Congratulations. Nice vehicle.
It is a very nice vehicle, but we'll go back to the, would you put the engine or the transmission into it? Because this one was $86,000.
I was going to ask that as my next question. How much was it? Isn't that crazy? $86,000.
And that's not with the extended warranty. That is... after some discounts and tax and out the door, $86,000-$87,000. It's a beautiful vehicle.
So you just spent $90,000 on a car.
I did.
Yep. And you got to get 10 years out of it.
Car.
You got to get 10 years out of it, right?
That's correct. So trying to get 10 years out of it, it seems like a couple of years ago, somebody called into your show, talked about getting their truck, I think it was a Ford, washed at a car wash. He tried to take good care of it, but within a couple of years, the truck was completely rusted and rotted out from the bottom because the car wash place used the recycled water.
Right, which is a problem.
Call it good filters.
Yep.
So the car wash that's local in town had switched ownerships. The previous one did not recycle the water because I had asked that question because I've got a new 2018 Sierra, and I had it undercoated. I want to get the new one undercoated as well through Linex of Lansing. But now the new car dealership, a large national company one, recycles their water. So I've inquired with them. They say that their filtration system, and frankly, they haven't heard this question, but it apparently removes sodium, but does not remove chloride. And they're not sure. They gave me a micron number, but I really can't find any information online, so I thought, well, I'll call Ron.
Yep.
Is there anywhere to start? Do we underwash the car, or do I skip the underwash all winter long and just go with the outside wash, or do I get the garden hose out at the house and wash it in my driveway on the lawn, trying not to slip all winter long?
I always remember, and I always tell this story, I always remember Russell's father, Mr. Kogi, out there with the garden hose and his beautiful 84 Buick Electra. He didn't care whether it was snow, rain. He was out there washing that car off after every snowstorm. Listen, I'm a fuss pot. Can you tell? I purchased my 2019 Silverado brand new in 2019, drove it to the shop, put it up on a lift, pulled off the tires, took apart certain things, wheel wells, took wheel houses out, got out the spray gun, and obviously I can do this. The truck had 3 miles on it, and I spray painted everything with Benjamin Moore low luster alkali paint. Benjamin Moore is not a rust preventative, it is a rust inhibitor. It was the best thing I could find at the time. I like Benjamin Moore. Now, before you do that, okay, because paint to me is a better option than undercoating. Undercoating to me is only as good as the person putting it on. I've seen some people be so zealous it then prohibits or inhibits repair possibility later on down the road. Undercoating also doesn't seem to be reacting well with certain chemicals that we've now advanced to for protecting ourselves from winter, because now that we have cars that will climb the side of a building with four-wheel drive like Speed Racer and the Mach 5, we now have chemicals that we have to deal with. Nobody wants to deal with roads with snow on them, so we kill the roads. That being said, I'm going to tell you, let me just pull over and take a pause here, Derek. I don't want to do this too fast. When we come back, I'll give you the answer of what I think you should look at, and then we can talk a little bit more about it from there. Stay put. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this.
Well, this car is automatic. It's systematic. It's hydromatic. Why, it's greased lightning.
Welcome back. We're on the Car Doctor. Let's get back to Derek in Michigan. Derek, you're still there.
I am.
So here's the magical answer you're waiting for. Go take a look at, and this I was only made aware of this product in the last couple of years. Go take a look at New Hampshire Oil Undercoating. This is a really neat idea, and I've read about this product, and it's kind of fascinating. You can buy self kits online. And it's an oil-based undercoating that they actually talk about on the website. They talk somewhere. There's a button there. I think it's nhoilundercoating.com. But just go Google search New Hampshire Oil Undercoating. They talk about why the oil-based undercoat works better than conventional undercoat and how it gives it the ability to resist the issues that come up as a result of, you know, we've now got road brine and salt and all the other chemicals that they're throwing on the road, and that's what rots the vehicles. And you know, this is the state of Maine where they've got this particular problem. This is where the product was developed. So I've got to think these guys know what they're dealing with. They've got such a problem up there, and I like that. I've seen pictures of it, and it's almost a paint like substance. It's not thick like undercoat. And paint, as good as it is, doesn't, I don't believe painting will do what this product does. And I think it's worth a look. I'm kind of excited to go buy another vehicle and maybe try this as my next thing. Because what you're saying is absolutely true. It's the road salt and all the stuff we throw on the road that's going to kill the vehicle, whether it's $90,000 or $9,000. And it's just sad.
All right. I will do so. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Derek. Take good care. Let's get on over and talk to Sandy in Wisconsin. Sandy wants to talk about batteries. Sandy, how can I help? Ron and Indian at your service.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This afternoon, I thought I would go over and get a free battery check.
Okay.
I think they do that over at Batteries and Bulbs Plus in La Crosse.
Right.
And a few weeks ago, I got a check up at O'Reilly's. It was okay.
Okay.
If they tell me I need a battery, they'll probably tell me they want to sell me something. But before I do, I just need to know something about batteries.
Okay.
It's a 2018 Spark.
Right.
And I got it in August of 2018.
All right.
And I didn't know, is it too soon to worry about a battery?
Well, it's never too soon. I'll say it like this. We generally check batteries as part of an oil change at the shop. We won't do it on a vehicle that's 1 year old, but we will do it on a vehicle that's 2 years old. Because anything's possible at any given time. And my attitude has been, listen, if I have the guy check a two-year-old battery and I have him check enough of them, the mechanic soon learns how to judge the machine and he knows how to do the tests. And, you know, it's just a matter of never hook up just to bad cars. Hook up to every car so you know what good and bad looks like. That being said, your battery is going to be rated by, they're probably going to do a cold cranking amperage test using a mathematical algorithm tester in English. All right. They're not going to be using a true carbon pile style tester that actually puts a real mechanical load test on the battery. They're going to be doing something where they're going to input the cold cranking amp capability of the battery. They'll take a voltage reading. They might take a temperature reading of the battery using an infrared device built into the tester, and then it will come back and report mathematical averages based on an algorithm. Are they accurate? They're fairly accurate, but they're still only as good as they are in the hands of the person doing the test. So who does the normal mechanical work on the car?
Well, I had my oil changed this summer, and it's Clayson,
right?
Chevrolet dealer.
Okay. And why would you not go to them for a battery test?
I was there and everything was fine.
Okay.
It's just that I thought rather than bothering them, do they give free tests if you bought your car from them?
I don't know. They might. I think that's a business decision, but you never know. My point becomes...
Okay, well, I thought that since they were offering a free test, I would just go in and have it done. And I'm assuming it'll be fine because, Brennigan's and Clayson are the same.
Right.
I got the car at Brennigan's, but Clayson will also do the work for me.
Right.
Closer to where I live. Are you familiar with La Crosse?
I know La Crosse, Wisconsin. I've seen it on a map, and I've actually passed through it once or twice myself. But as far as buildings or businesses that are there, no. What I would tell you is, go to the place, go where you're going, have them do a battery test. I wouldn't purchase a battery until you take it back to your regular mechanic and ask them, because sometimes you're stirring the pot a little too much. If they checked it and it was fine, you'd want to know why 3 or 4 months later now it's bad. It is a little early for a battery. Good luck to you, Sandy. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Oh, there was a quick hour of radio. Holy cow, where'd that go? Just a quick update, because I know we talk about this from time to time. So my wife's car came back from the Ford dealer. Still not fixed. I actually looked up the records on this. They started working on this car February 2020 for this screen freezing up and lockup problem. And I say this not because I'm trying to grind the axe, but if you're driving, evidently this is a common issue, 17, 18, Ford Explorers with Sync. I believe it's a Sync 3 system is what they're telling us. They've got a lot of issues with the screen, the navigation and the radio and the heat control screen in the center of the dash there. Locking up, Ford has come out with, according to what I've been told and some of the things that I found, that they've come out with more than a few software updates for this, all to no avail, all to fixing nothing. We picked it up yesterday after its most recent software update. And it's great because I'm really, it's a good experience for me. I understand what it's like for people that go to other repair shops. And I you know, like I turned to Susie, I said, not to be egotistical, but I know how good a job I do. It's fixed. Like this, how hard can this be? So I called Ford. I called customer service, got to speak to a customer service rep. The first guy hung up on me. The second guy put me on hold, and I ended up listening to a hair replacement by Hair Club for Men Ed. I called back a third time. I talked to a gentleman by the name of Eric. He hooked me up. We're going to start with Ford next week. They're going to send out a tech rep, and we're going to see where this goes. So more to come, but year and a half, still not fixed. Good job. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, please remember, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya. We'll